I received a shaila several years ago, but it was so bizarre that I was sure it would never repeat itself. And then, lo and behold, very recently I got the identical shaila again. I figured, okay, I got it twice. It's kedai to talk about it. We'll quote the shaila of the week for tonight's shiur. So it sounds like a strange presentation. When the world ends up with the idols, there's matters inside your house. So the ma'aseh shaila kachoya. A couple years ago, somebody came up to me and they told me that they had just bought a house. And at the closing, as soon as they finished the closing, so the non-Jew they bought it from, said, wow, it really worked. And the fellow bought the house and said, what really worked? He said, well, the idols really worked. The idol really worked. He said, this the person described to him, that there was a little statue, a little idol, that he was told that if you bury in the backyard of the house that you're planning on selling, you get a good deal for your house or something. He said, kachava. But the person had his little idol, a little vessel, that was buried in the backyard, and had just transferred ownership in the house to this from Jew. So the Jew asked him, where in the backyard is it? He says, I have no idea. I buried it a year ago when I saw it. I don't remember exactly what it was. It was very deep in the backyard. So the shah, the fellow asked me, is that a violation of Minat Torah? Well, Savish Uevo Beisach, it was an Issa Minat Torah to have a Vedazor in your house, even if the idol doesn't belong to you. The Torah says, not allowed to do it. Maybe he would be required up he did to go ahead and excavate the whole backyard to go try to get rid of this uproot this idol. Not it's like by Rabbi Matzei to make sure that he doesn't own the chametz, doesn't have the idol, doesn't have the avodah in his house. That was the shaila that he asked me. So lo and behold, the same not the same person, but the identical shaila. Maybe this guy sold the house to somebody else. I don't think it was the same house. The same thing. Apparently, his idols have been getting around. The same exact shaila. So we analyzed the shaila a little bit and try to figure out a little bit of a limud chus, why perhaps he doesn't have to go dig up the entire backyard. So let's see if we can learn through this figure a little bit. And believe it or not only this crazy scenario, but somebody's shadows really do come up to my side. So the figure begins in the first, the Rambam Kamos. It's the Mishnah Masechet Avodah Zarah. And the Mishnah says, after Makom She'amu Lahaskir, Lo Lebeis Dira Amru, Meishu Machnas Lasoch Avodah Kicham, Shnemu Lasavis Oevel Bisecha. That even though a person is permitted to rent house to a non-Jew, the original context of this discussion was in Eretz Yisrael, there's a whole different prohibition of selling land, it's called Yisrael Los Echonim, selling land to non-Jews in Eretz Yisrael, an entirely different discussion. In the middle of that discussion, the Mishnah says that even in a place in Chutz Lawrence, where there's no prohibition of renting out, I want to rent an apartment, I want to rent a house to a non-Jew, what could possibly be wrong? But the Mishnah says, no, there's a problem, Lo Lebeis Dira Amru. You shouldn't rent out an apartment, you shouldn't rent out a house to a non-Jew, if he's going to actually live in that house. If you want to rent out the space, he's going to store things in it, he's going to keep his animals there, that's okay. But to rent him out a place where he's going to live in, that's a problem, because the derech was that the non-Jews would bring over his own, they would bring idols into their homes, and that would be my problem. So I'm having a toev, I'm having an over his own in my house. Why is it still called my house? I rented it out to the non-Jews. If you might actually infer from here, you see that tchiris lo kanya, that if I own something and I rent it to somebody, I still retain ownership on that object. Let's say, for example, when I lease a car, it doesn't say Sobolovsky on the registration. It says the name of the owner of the car. I'm the socher. I'm the renter. So to over here, that the house is nikri, the house is determined to still belong to the original balabayas, who is the Jew. And when the guy brings of it his own in, that's my problem, presumably min haTorah. So comes Tosas on the spot and has a bomb cash on his din. Tosas asks in the first line, Apa makasha amu lahaskal lebeidir amu, yesh lefak fake. One could question, Amayu somchem b'nei adam limkul haskebat mevkichav b'afle beis dira. So he says, do it all the time. So he says, the guy owns an apartment building. I don't know how many apartment buildings they have in the middle of this. Guy owns a house. He doesn't rent that house. The non-Jew never heard of such a thing. The Taisa says, the Pharisee Mishnah says, it's also in the Torah. And b'zman hazeh, ma'isim b'chayom, everybody does it. But what's going on? How do you explain this discrepancy? So Tosus tries very, very hard to try to explain what this is based on. So first, Tosus quotes an answer that earlier in the Tosus they point out from Rabbeinu Chaim. Rabbeinu Chaim is Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen. He was one of the Talmidim of Rabbeinu Tam. He had a fascinating history. He actually left France, left Yeshiva Rabbeinu Tam, and moved to Eretz Yisrael. He went Aliyah. Not Nefesh B'Nefesh of 2017. He went in Aliyah following the Crusaders. The only ones who had the roads from France to Eretz Yisrael were the Crusaders. So he traveled to Eretz Yisrael in the Middle Ages. Him and the Bali HaTaisis went to Eretz Yisrael. There are two versions when Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen got to Eretz Yisrael. He lived in Eretz Yisrael for a while, and because he was lifted in Eretz, I don't remember. He lived in Eretz Yisrael. He actually learned a lot of kachim Apparently, it was part of his whole scheme. I'm going to talk to you. Don't bring kavanas, which never happened. But a lot of the Tosafot in Maseches Vachim quote from Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen. There's a version of Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen that says that bizman hazeh, it's too dangerous to move to Eretz Yisrael. He writes that cheskes adrachim, the drachim b'cheskes b'sukanim, that to travel to Eretz Yisrael is so dangerous bizman hazeh that a person is not chayef to move to Eretz Yisrael bizman hazeh. So there are some who say that Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen actually said that, and the others will say that he never really said it. He himself went. So I can understand both sides of the story. Those who say that he said you have to travel with the Crusaders for a year to Eretz Yisrael, Tacha could say, with honesty, so again, it's not clear. But the Maaser Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen came up with an interesting answer, which also affects the Eretz Yisrael Chutz La'aretz story. It says Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen in the second line, says, he says that maybe when the Torah says, Beisecha means a Jewish home in a Jewish land. Because if you own a house in Chutz La'aretz, it's not really a house anyway. So the whole list of Losavi, so Beisecha wouldn't apply in Chutz La'aretz. Quite a chiddush. The Tosafot says they find it very, very difficult to say. And we can skip down a little bit to the fourth line of the Tosafot. The first one line is B'chutz La'aretz. The old kashal of Rabbi Yehuda, the Gabi Mezuzah, the Chzid Beisecha, Chinami, Tehmet, Mishnish, Tobias, B'chutz La'aretz, Yipatman, and Mezuzah. That would be quite a startling statement. You don't have to put Mezuzah on Nukula. You don't have to put Mezuzah on Chutz La'aretz, because it's not called Beisecha. But the Tosafot says that's ridiculous. I think you say such a thing. Of course you put up Mezuzah on Chutz La'aretz, but that doesn't to put up mezuzahs. So he says, how could Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen say that the word Beisecha, Hinuchas Mezuzah clearly includes Chutz La'aretz, and Hinuchas Avodah Zarah doesn't include Chutz La'aretz? So Tosafot rejects this answer. So what is the answer? It's very easy to reject one answer. What is the correct answer? But Tosafot continues. If you skip down now, the first word line is Ella. Ella Tam of Farsh Rabbeinu Achonon. Tosafot goes to one of the Balei Tosafot Rabbeinu Achonon. Rabbeinu Achonon also had a very tragic end of his life. He was actually killed in the Crusades. So Rabbeinu Elchanan, one of the Balei HaTosafot, says that the answer is as follows. In that time of first Rabbeinu Elchanan, if they could show Omer Torah lo Savis u'evo b'secha, Igel ha-Neymar lo Oser el b'veis ha-Yisrael atzvah shudar b'secha b'odah darbo. So says Rabbeinu Elchanan, the Issa d'Arais of having a Verizora in your home means that you're living in the house. Lo Savis u'evo b'secha, not that I'm living in one place and I'm renting a house 10 miles away to a non-Jew. The real Issa D'Araisa is only if your mamish living in the house. A few will be Eretz Yisrael, and the Rabbeinu Chanan says that even in Eretz Yisrael, if you're not living in the house, that's not also in the Torah. Just as the Gabi the Mitzvah Mezuzah says Rabbeinu Chanan, the criteria for Mezuzah and for Avedizar are identical, and if a person owns the house but is not living there, he's talking about Mechayba Mezuzah. So says Rabbeinu Elchanan, the real, real bona fide issue of having a Venezuelan home is only the home that I'm living in. But the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to rent the house to a guy because he brings the Venezuelan in. So why is that a problem? So Rabbeinu Elchanan says that's only a problem with the Rabbanan. Basically, Rabbi Yochanan says there are two levels of prohibition of having a Venezuelan in your home. If you're living in that home and you have an idol there, that's a big problem in the Torah. If you're not living there and you're renting it to a guy, that's a small problem in the Rabbanan. Now he continues, and he says if you skip down to the last line, the cave and the schiris bais dira ain't also element the Rabbanan, aparet and cave chutzar tekilu. Rabbi Yochanan says that is the Rabbanan of not having an idol in your house when you're living there, that issue was lifted in Chutz La'aretz. Not that the entire issue, Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen said, that the entire issue of owning of a desire, having of a desire in your house doesn't apply in Chutz La'aretz. So Rabbeinu Chaim says, that's not true. If it would be an issue of deraisa, i.e. that you're living in the house, that would apply in Chutz La'aretz as well. The only time it's only in the Rabbanon is if you're not living there anyway, and that issue of the Rabbanon, they're lifted in Chutz La'aretz. When all the dust settles, both Rabbeinu Chaim and Rabbeinu Chaim did a good job of explaining why nobody cares about this issue anymore. No one's machber in this issue anymore. We live in France, we live in America, wherever we live, and we're renting houses, apartments, right and left to Goyim, and nobody cares that the Goyim are bringing in their idols. It doesn't matter, either because it's Chutz La'aretz, and therefore there's no issue altogether, or it's Chutz La'aretz, and there's no issue d'rabbanan altogether. These are two of the traditional answers that are given to solve the dilemma. How come the Mishnah says it's tossing it, everybody is doing it? But the Rosh in Maseches Avodah Zarah, in the third of the Ma'amikamos, gives another suggestion. The Rosh says, "The old Nehidu didan chirus lo kanya." He says it's true that in halacha we paskin that when I rent a house to somebody, I am still the owner of the house, and therefore I do have a problem with having idols there. But Kevin Shad Umos Tekefa, but we live in a gracious society, and the non-Jews are running the laws. We're bound by the Adin of the Bachusa. He says that in the Goyisha secular law, so the act of a schirus, the transaction of schirus is considered to be a mechir liyoma. It's considered to be a real sale. You can't just stop back out. You can't just break a lease just like that. So the halacha doesn't deem schirus to be like a sale, but the Goyisha world does. Therefore, since we are bound by the secular understanding, it's understood that when we enter into a business deal with a guy, we're going to follow the secular law. The guy doesn't care what it says in Chashim Mishpat. But since our relationship between the Jew and the guy is such that the renter, the tenant, now really, in a sense, owns the property for that time that he's renting, so there's nothing wrong with the Jew owning, quote-unquote, owning the house and having the guy bring a Vedazar in. But maybe the Mishnah say that you're not allowed to rent out a house to a guy, if the guy is going to bring in the Vedazar, that's when the Jewish law is prevailing. But if the secular Goyisha law is prevailing, and it's his house, so be it. So it's not a problem whatsoever. So we have three different approaches in the Rishonim to explain away why is it Lemaisa that nobody cares, nobody follows this din anymore. So either Rabbeinu Chaim, who says that Issa doesn't apply to the Rabbeinu Chanan says the lower Issa the Rabbanah, when you're not living there, doesn't apply in Chutzlars. But the Rush says the whole mechanics doesn't apply because I don't really own the house anymore. It's really Nikra, I'll shame the tenant. I once had a fascinating shot that somebody called me about, where this Rush, who started out to be a big Kula, now potentially turns out to be a big Chum. Somebody called me that they were renting one of these houses near a ski lodge for a couple of days, and they walk into the house, they just signed an agreement contract to rent the house for a week. And they come into the house and they see their idols all over the place. Mamish, we all have a totem, who knows what kind of stuff people are mamish worshiping in the house. The question is that my problem? So here I'm living in a house, I'm renting a house that has idols in it. So now, Kozman, that we didn't read this Rush, so we thought, well, I'm not the owner of the house, I'm just a renter, not my problem. Well, wait a second, the Rush just told me that everything changes this man is that. In secular law, I am the owner of the house, at least the temporary owner. He can't throw me out, it's a breach of contract. But once the secular law dictates that you can't throw out of the house, no, so I'm the owner of the house for the next week, and I have idols in my house. So we, like we say, every kula is a chumra. The Rush started out to defend the practice of renting out houses to goyim, but it turns out that when you rent out houses to goyim, you're better off with the Rush. When you're renting out houses from goyim, then you're in trouble if you follow the view of the Rush. So that was the bad news. The good news, he didn't ask Mishal until the week was over. He thought about it. When he came home, he realized maybe he should have asked him in the Mishal. We told him the Mishal, he told him next time it happens, he should try to rent a different apartment. You know, that would be a problem. So let's try to collect now all the pieces of this puzzle and see how does this play out in terms of Ashayla. Here you have a fellow who owns a house. He was just acquired a house, and lo and behold, there's an idol tucked away somewhere in the backyard of the house. Is that his problem or not? So the only opinion that would be lenient on this whole story would be the first opinion, the view of Rabbeinu Chaim. Because Rabbeinu Chaim said that this whole list doesn't apply in Chutzlars. Well, Sabi said, nothing's your house, nothing belongs to you in Chutzlars. Only if you live in it, all those things really belong to you. And therefore, the whole list of HaKamikoko wouldn't apply. That's a big, big kula. So we have a lot of difficulty applying that kula. Rabbeinu Chaim didn't put mezuzahs in his doors. It's possible to believe. I guess he did put mezuzahs up in the door. So that's very hard to believe. So the first answer, Rabbeinu Chaim, is very difficult for us to accept. So either we accept Rabbeinu Elchanan's view. Rabbeinu Elchanan says that the Yisad Yerais is only violated when you're living there. But the problem is I am living there. I'm living here. I'm using the backyard. And I know full well there's an island. I can't find it. I know the island's there. But that would be a potential Issa Min HaTorah, even if it's not. Because the Kul, according to Rabbeinu Elchanan, is only if it's only a Derabon. According to the Rush, Avadat is an Issa Yerais. According to the Rush, I know the idol is there. I own the house. So that's maybe it's a big problem. So I have a real estate there. I have to do whatever I can to excavate the whole backyard to make sure I get rid of this idol. The pasht is not. The same way that that would be a big chiddush to say that by chometz lemashal, by chometz the Gemara Taka has a pasuk that says gvulecha. If the Gemara is a havamim, then maybe the issue only applies to a bais that's like maybe. Maybe you're right. I don't know. That would be a big chiddush to say this is only if it's mamash in your house itself. I don't know. Not even a portion that your backyard is not really part of your house also. I don't know. I'm not sure. So what age do we have for this person? Is there any way to get around this problem? So maybe we should go down a little bit of a different route. Maybe we should assume that in Ochinami that we do have an Avodah Zorah there and there is a potential to deraisa, but maybe we can cancel, we can revoke the status of this idol being an Avodah Zorah. Do magic. The answer is there's a principle called bitul avodah zarah. Bitul avodah zarah means that even if you have something that is avodah zarah, but if a certain action or declaration or done to this avodah zarah that basically shows that it's nothing, nobody accepts it, we give it a kick, make a litzatz out of it in some way, a shape or form, that is mevatel l'shem avodah zarah from it. And once it's bottled l'shem avodah zarah, then avodah zarah anymore. All these terms fall off. It's not a violation of the Sovereign. So is that a possibility? Can we go down that route of perhaps being mevatel? Somehow we have to figure out how that works. How do you do that? Bitul avodah zarah, is that really an option? So there are mishnayos and gemaras and then in Masechet avodah zarah that talk about all the ins and outs of the principle of bitul avodah zarah. That didn't have Torah. The gemara learns it from Sukkim. But the question is it really practical to pull off a bitul avodah zarah bizman hazeh? So in the fourth of the Rambam Kabbalah, so the Shulchan Aruch in your day, the Shulchan Aruch calls the basic din of bitul avodah zarah. And it starts out quoting right out of a Mishnah of avodah zarah. That a goy can be mevatel avodah zarah. A Jew cannot be mevatel avodah zarah. That's the ABCs of bitul avodah zarah. That only a goy has the ability to be mevatel avodah zarah. So the first thing you have to do is find the goy who's willing to. We don't even know what bitul avodah zarah means yet. But the first thing we have to do is find the goy who's willing to do it for us. And once we find the goy who's able to do it, then even though he doesn't own the avodah zarah, that would also be acceptable. Even if he doesn't worship that particular avodah zarah, so not only does bitul apply if he decides that, well, I used to worship this idol for the last 20 years, and now I throw it onto the floor. I think it's a big joke. So not only is that bitul avodah zarah, but even if it's even if he doesn't believe in this particular idol, but the fact that he's a goy. And he's not avodah zarah, so he has the ability to be mevatel avodah zarah. If he'll be a korcho, we can even almost force him to be mevatel. He doesn't even deserve mitzvah. A lot of coolers and others bitul avodah zarah. Ubevat sheyeh debetiv avodah zarah, provided that he understands avodah zarah, means he's an avodah zarah himself. We just got a second condition that's necessary. So he has to be non-Jewish, a given. And number two, he has to be an avodah zarah. He doesn't have to be an avodah zarah of this avodah zarah, but he's got to be a general avodah zarah. Let's say you have a child. He doesn't know anything. He bows down to idols. Doesn't know what he's doing even. Oh, shlichin shaitan. He's like, guys, come on. He doesn't know what's going on. And he's over the avodah zarah. That also doesn't mean anything. Or we have someone who's not an over the avodah zarah. He's not Jewish, but he doesn't worship idols. So go and get toishav. If you have a ger toishav, ain't nichol levatel. A ger toshav, though a ger toshav means someone who accepted upon themselves not to violate the Shev Mitzvah Zdenach. Every non-Jew is obligated to observe the Shev Mitzvah Zdenach. But if he formally accepts it in front of a base, then he is elevated to the status of being a ger toshav. A ger toshav has certain rights and privileges. He's allowed to stay in Eretz Yisrael. We're obligated to support him in Eretz Yisrael. We have to be especially nice to him. There's certain mitzvahs that govern our support and looking after the welfare of the ger toshav. It happens to be that many of the din of ger toshav don't apply bizman hazeh. The Gemara learns that from Sukkim, that the parish of ger toshav is given only bizman shayovel noheg, which hasn't been around for over 2,500 years. The ger toshav doesn't apply bizman hazeh. Machlokes have shown them whether there are certain parts of ger toshav maybe do apply bizman hazeh, but for the most part, the din of ger toshav are put on hold bizman hazeh. But tachlis, if you have a non-Jew who doesn't believe in Haz, he doesn't worship avodah zarah, so he does not have the koach to be mevatel avodah zarah. So the pool of people available to do it, we don't even know what bitul avodah zarah is yet, but the people in the pool available to do it for us is shrinking significantly. Then the Ramah continues, and he writes, and here there are two different versions of what the Ramah says. So there are, the first version is without the brackets, just starting with Vishma'elim. The Vishma'elim she'enim ovdi avodah zarah ein mechol levatel. So the first version is saying that the Yishma'elim, the Arabs, well, clearly not of the avodah zarah. The Rambam writes that explicitly. They believe in monotheism. They have other issues, but in terms of monotheism, they definitely believe in. So clearly Yishma'elim would not qualify to be mevatel avodah zarah because they themselves are not of the avodah zarah. So according to one version, they have been censored into the Ramah, Uma Shalanu, that the Ramah begins to talk about other non-Jews, not Yishma'elim. The Ramah didn't live in Arab countries. He lived in European countries. So that's a big question, where exactly other non-Jews would fit into the picture. Whether, even though it's clear that they, under no circumstances is a Jew permitted to practice any other religion, including religions that profess to be monotheistic, but that's clearly out of bounds, and any belief in that type of a system is considered to be a full-fledged idolatry for a Jew. There are some opinions that maintain that for a non-Jew, that's not really idolatry. The Rishonim called Shituf, that they believe in a partnership, they basically believe in the Bari Elim with a little bit of other things involved. So that, according to some opinions in the Rishonim, some poskim, that's not a Vodazor from a Goy's vantage point. From a Jew's vantage point, the Gemara says Beferish, that a Jew is not permitted to believe with the Bari Elim with any Shituf whatsoever. But maybe the notion of a Shituf would be permissible for a non-Jew. But the bottom line is we're going to have a lot of trouble finding someone who's going to really, really qualify as an Ovid of Edizara for the purposes of being Mavaptavis of Edizara. It was a nice idea, but we'd have to work really, really hard to get it. And even a Niach that we're going to get it, how are we going to do it? Even a Niach, we're going to find that non-Jew is going to cooperate with us, is going to be Mavaptavis of Edizara, he himself is an Ovid of Edizara, how is he going to do it exactly? So there are sugyas in the Gemara about how to be Mavaptavis of the Mishnayis, how to be Mavaptavis of Edizara. So the Gemara, the Mishnayis, and the Gemara is talking about you take it and you smash it, you throw it on the floor, you break a piece of it, things like that. That's going to be very hard to do because we don't even know where it is. That's the whole problem. If we were able to find it, we take it and throw it out. The problem is, how can we move a bottle if we can't even find it? So the Ramah, at the very end of the fourth of the Mamakamos, two lines from the bottom, the Yesh Omrim, the Afilu Bitla Biamir Biam Havi Bitl. There are those who say that Bitl is sufficient with just words alone. We'll take like a Bitl Chavit. As long as the person says, that idol, a piece of junk, so maybe that would be good enough. That Ramah, those Rishonim, Mordechai, would be very helpful for this kind of scenario of Bitla Vedazar. To do a Bitla Vedazar through a physical Maaseh is going to be impossible because we don't even know where in the world this idol is. Best we could do is through some kind of a Dibur B'Alma, and the best we could do is we'd have to find a non-Jew who meets the criteria of himself being an Ovid Vedazar. You can already begin to see that this is not the best solution in the world. Are there any other better solutions for us? We struck out in terms of trying to say the Yisra of Lo Savi doesn't apply to us, but going to most of the Rishonim, it would apply in this scenario. We're almost 0-2 in terms of trying to pull off a bit of it. What else is available for us? So maybe we have to go back to the drawing board and ask ourselves, is this really a Vedazara in the first place? Is this a real bona fide Vedazara? Now, after talking a little bit more, finding out a little bit more from some of the people who knew a little bit more about this thing, what gives us the right to learn and study about these things? You're not allowed to learn about Avodah Zarah. This in the Torah, and that's supposed to study other religions, not supposed to study about idols, not supposed to study about Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says the favorite that you're permitted to study L'Havid L'Horus, that you're permitted to study about these kinds of things, if it's necessary for you to paskin, let's say for the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin, if they don't understand Avodah Zarah, how are they going to know how to paskin a Shiloh and what's Avodah Zarah? If you don't understand it, so you're not going to be able to possibly say, Chai, did he pop it? What did he do? Did he really worship it? Am I worshiping it? There are dinim and hukas of Edazar that depend upon knowledge of that particular religion. So to over here, that you have to do a little bit of research and you'll find out what it is. Is this real of Edazar or not real of Edazar? So the little research that I was told, I mean, my facts are only as true as people who are reporting to me, I was told that it's not that this particular idols are really actually bowed down to them. Nobody really worships, nobody really believes in them in the sense of having divine powers. What they really believe in them is more like a good luck charm. You know, more like four leaf clovers, like rabbit foot, things of that nature. But they didn't think anyone actually bows down, brings a sacrifice, offers a gift to this idol, and then hocus pocus something's going to happen. They thought it was just a good omen, a good luck kind of a thing. Again, I'm not advocating doing those kinds of things. Those things would be awesome in a Torah. If a Jew would actually believe in this kind of Narishkeit, that would be an Issa Der Aisa, those kinds of things. But in terms of being a real Avodah Zarah, that somebody believes in, that somebody actually worships, somebody only becomes Avodah Zarah when it was Mamash Nevad. So if this was never really Nevad, nobody bowed down to it, nobody spoke to it, nobody prayed to it, nobody did any act of Avodah Zarah to it, nobody brought a korban to it, and it was never really Nitfas as Avodah Zarah in the first place. If it was never Nitfas as Avodah Zarah, then there wouldn't be an Israel together on the Sabbath saying Besecha. If it was sitting in my living room, I would throw it out. I wouldn't want it to be there. But in terms of my backyard, I'm going to spend $10,000 to excavate my whole backyard, most probably not. So I was talking to somebody, it was just today. So they asked me, did you hear the Shaila? What's that guy came to me today? And she was, did you hear the Shaila about the Avodah Zarah that was destroyed? I said, it must be my Shia. I said, you must be talking about my Shia. I said, no. I started to tell all the Shia, no. They told me a Maisa Shoya, not that far. It wasn't in Tinek, not that far from Tinek. It was a Maisa Shoya that apparently somebody had bought a house, and in the backyard there was a tree, And they were told by some of the neighbors that the non-Jewish neighbors who lived there before had mamish worshipped the tree. I mean, there was a Hashem tree. They had brought sacrifice to it, they brought gifts to it, they bowed down to it, they prayed to it. Mamish, I don't know what in the United States of America in the year 2017, there were people who were worshipping the tree. So when the person found out about it, he said, well, he said, that's an Asherah. That's exactly what the Torah says. That's Asherahem, that's from Vaish. You have to get rid of that. It's a mitzvah deraisa of Shereitzot Asherah. That's what they did. I just heard about it today. It would have been maybe it's next week's Shah of the Week, but I was told that the Mamish got the tree chopped down and they Mamish burnt it, just a Shufun Ba'esh, the Mamish burnt it, and then he was describing to me that the din, when you get rid of an Asherah, you have to Mishar Shachareha, you have to remove the entire tree with the roots, the Hakol Migal Kol. So he was describing to me how they had it, whatever they had to pay to get Mamish get rid of this Asherah, because it's an Isidir Eitz to have an Asherah sitting in your backyard. That's for sure an Isidir Eitz, if people Mamish fell down to it. It's a mitzvah Isidir Eitz, it's Shreifat of Adazark. So he asked one question, I said, they make a bracha. Let's make a bracha when you serve for the Torah. I don't know, he said, he's not sure the bracha lost the shuffle, I don't know. So, but that's the thing. So anyway, so these very, very bizarre, very, very strange shalas from the ski slopes to the guys in Bergerfield to the people in other places in New Jersey about all these crazy kinds of shalas. So every once in a blue moon, you get some of these shalas. These are mamash real, potentially soon they're ice. So Baruch Hashem, the world has progressed to the point where it's usually not relevant for us. Every once in a while, you do get these strange kind of shalas. Okay. I thought not, because I thought there was no real of it as well. That's what, but if it would have been real of it as well, I would have told him he's mechuyev to spend the money to get rid of it. That's what I was told. He did a little bit of research. That's when I understood that it wasn't really real. Nobody really, really found out. Okay.
Okay.